The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the big show, Your Money with David Hayes. Thank you for hanging out with us. A good one today. Hot Rod Holloway will be in the house. We're going to talk about remembering quantitative easing, a little look back on history. Why did we do it? Where are we now? And where do we go from here? And then, of course, this week, the Trump proposed tax cuts were announced. What does this mean for you? And is this it? Or do we see a bunch of battles coming? And then later on, how much should you really have saved at age 30, 40, 50, and 60? Certainly not something to depress you. Something to just inform you on about where you should be. Let's do a little news of the week brought to you by the Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame. It's supported, of course, by us here at Comprehensive Financial Consultants. To learn more about Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame, go to mcshof.com, or as I've been saying for the last few weeks, just Google Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame. Of course, I mentioned a lot of wrangling in Washington over a lot of different things, but in a statistic tracked since 1971, only 28% of Americans today say they're satisfied by the way our country is being governed. Remarkably, the high point for this statistic was 59% back in September 2002. Even the best polling outcome resulted in 2 out of 5 Americans pretty much are dissatisfied with the government. That's why the old joke that Senator Todd Young said, hey, it's gotten so bad when I'm traveling back from Washington, when people say, hey, what do you do for a living? He has to tell them he's a lawyer. It's gotten that bad. All right, here's something else. More than just wages. You know, a lot of folks say, I make $20 an hour, I make $30 an hour. But really, it's more than just wages. For every $1 spent in wages and salaries in the private sector, employers spend an additional 44 cents on benefits. The average compensation, $23.15 per hour. But the cost of benefits have averaged $10.11 per hour. This comes from the Labor Bureau statistics. Going to party like it's 1999, you know, after adjusting numerical data for the past for inflation, the median household income for 2016 is $59,000. It's the highest ever recorded in the United States, surpassing the previous median income record high of $58,665, set back in, yep, you guessed it, 1999. That's why I said party like it's 1999. Hey, man, it's been a long day. Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis sent us that information. The government surveyed a lot of different people for a lot of different things, but the top echelon, it took $170,500 of income to rank in the top 10% of earners in calendar year 2016. That comes from the Census Bureau. And did you know the number one city in the United States for jobs is Pittsburgh? The study was based on job openings, median base salary, job satisfaction, and also the median cost of a home in that area. That comes from Glassdoor. And then finally, you know, we've been trying to keep people aware of different scams that are happening out there. Well, a good friend of mine sent me a recording of a voicemail scam that he just received. And I thought, you know what? Some people would listen to this, get scared to death, make the phone call, pay something, and then be, you know, like, why did I do that? So what I want to do is play that recording for you now.
After that, you will be taken under custody by the local cops, as there are 4 serious allegations pressed on your name at this moment. We would request you to get back to us, so that we can discuss about this case, before taking any legal action against you. The number to reach us is 785. 261-9751. I repeat, 785-261-9751. Thank you.
You guys get the point. Here's the thing. Do not fall for this stuff, please. And especially if you get a phone call from someone that says, hey, Rod, it's David. It's your grandson. I'm in jail. please send money and bail me out. Don't tell my mom. She'll freak out. Guys, it's not your... Here, they go on Facebook. They figure stuff out. They can come up with things that you would think, how in the world would they know this? It's a scam. It's a scam. It's a scam. It's a scam. Again, News of the Week brought to you by the Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame. Again, learn more about Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame over at MCSHOF.com. When we come back, we're going to talk about remembering quantitative easing. Take a look back. We're going to talk about, you know, where it came from, where it is today, and where do we go from here. And we'll have Hot Rod Holloway joining us as well. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Thanks for hanging out with us. Rod Holloway is in the house. He'll be joining us here in just a couple seconds. You know, last week, the Dow gained some. The S&P eked out a very small increase. NASDAQ was down just a little bit. Three stories dominated the conversation and drove investor attention the week last week. We had, of course, healthcare policy that got kind of kicked to the curb again. Tensions with North Korea. We've had that, obviously, pretty much every week for the past several months. But really, interest rate updates. Well, the Fed chose not to raise interest rates at the most recent meeting, which no one expected that to happen. It did indicate that December was definitely on the table. But really, when announcing the latest interest rate perspective, the Fed also indicated it would begin reducing its balance sheet, meaning basically its bank account, next month. But what does it really mean? Why does the Fed actually have $4.2 trillion balance sheet anyway? Well, just a brief look back on what's called quantitative easing. I mean, during the financial crisis and the recession, the Fed took an unprecedented and controversial approach to stabilizing our economy and the world's market. In fact, Ben Bernanke was once referred to as Helicopter Ben, which said that he said early on, even well before this ever happened, that if an economic crisis came, I would throw dollar bills out of helicopters to get it into people's pockets. Well, they didn't necessarily do that. They actually put the cash on the balance sheets of banks. So, but what they did, they purchased trillions of dollars of treasury and mortgage-backed bonds between 2008 and 2014. It aimed to encourage hiring, economic growth, investing. This action is what they now call quantitative easing. They went through three rounds of this stuff. The Fed added trillions of dollars of new money to the financial markets. And since quantitative easing first began almost a decade ago, believe it or not, that's hard for me to believe, we've seen, obviously, unemployment reach a 16-year low, the S&P more than triple from the bottom in 2009. And even though economic growth, obviously, still slower than before the recession, the Fed believes the economy is now strong enough to handle a more normalized policy, whatever that means. So in October, the Fed will start gradually lowering its balance sheet, currently equal to about a quarter of GDP is what they're saying. So if GDP is at 3.25, hopefully, wouldn't that be great? They would say, okay, we're going to sell basically a quarter of our GDP off in bonds. No one can even fathom how much $4.2 trillion really is. So far, the market's had a pretty mild response to the plan. The Fed begins slowly allowing billions of dollars of bonds to roll off, basically maturing. And we're gonna closely monitor this economic impact because, as Eric Geisler said last time he was on the show, we've never been here before. But we know monetary policy can be very complex, more than I can understand, more than probably they can understand. And it is. It's just the facts. But, you know, we think that you deserve to understand kind of the large forces in play in this going on here and how it impacts your financial life. And Rod Holloway, our equity portfolio manager over at CFCA, now joins me. And Rod, we really don't know how this will play out over time. My guess is it's going to be slower and a more of a grind to reduce their balance sheet than maybe anyone anticipates. Well, you and I may be talking about this here on the show 10, 15 years from now, possibly. Who knows?
Yeah, well, you have to assume it's definitely going to go down in future economic books, maybe even in history books and discuss, because as you just alluded to previously, we've not been here before, so they don't know what the potential ramifications are. So this is going to be one big, massive case study at the time that they're doing it, which is why I have said I'll be surprised to see a rate increase in December. I'm by no means a guy who follows the rate and makes predictions on that on a regular basis. So it is a complete uneducated guess. And really, the only thing behind that guess is the fact that I think they will want a little more time to evaluate the impact of the beginning of the unwinding of their balance sheet without any other monetary forces being in effect. Now, is a 25 basis point increase in December something that would have a monumental move in how monetary policy is acted? No, it isn't. But I also think that they want a more clean window to look at least short term, to say, okay, while we were letting these things roll off and we weren't reinvesting our interest payments that we were getting and we didn't reinvest the principal as it matured, how did that affect the market, the bond market, the monetary cash market, the velocity of money, all of those things without another monetary effect being included in that?
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, you know, basically what's going to happen to long-term rates as we start to do this? Are they going to go up? Are they going to stay the same? Will we be completely shocked and they go down? Who really knows? I would think they would be very cautious, like you said, to raise rates as well. But the average person listening is saying they're going to raise rates, going to raise rates. Folks, when they raise the rate, that has nothing to do, for the most part, with what you're doing. It is the rate they charge each other pretty much for the overnight borrowing of funds. And really, they don't need to borrow any money anyway. They already have tons and tons of cash, Rod. So I think they're looking at this thinking, you know what? I'm not so sure it makes any difference whatsoever if we raise rates or not. So let's just not raise rates and let's create a vacuum of sorts when we start to unwind our balance sheet and let's see what happens. Because, heck, as much as we hope that we're going to continue to have some growth and the market's going to do fine and all that kind of good stuff, the fact is the bond market's telling us, hey, there ain't no growth. There is no inflation. The 30-year is still, what, at 280? The 10-year's at 230? That's a very flat yield curve. And in fact, I mean, it's scary close to being flat or inverted. So why get in a big hurry? Let's just do what they need to do. Do it slowly. Do it methodically. The only fear is that you get too far down the road and you go through the another economic contraction, which we will have, by the way, folks. We will have another economic contraction at some point. And then you're sitting still with $2 or 3 trillion on your balance sheet. Interest rates are so low. And then you say, what do we do?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think that's part of the angst from the Fed overall is exactly what you alluded to. If we run into another economic downturn, they have fewer quivers in their arsenal to come out and do something with because rates are so low already. Oh, okay, you want to try and cut rates to stimulate the economy and get some capital flowing again. Well, you already got historically low rates. So what's that quarter rate cut really do for you? So I think that's a lot of what they see and why they want to see rates go up, just so they have a little more freedom and flexibility for that next downturn, that they actually have some things that they can do to helpfully offset that downturn.
Okay, Rod, the markets, I've been carrying around the JP Morgan Guide to the Markets chart of the S&P 500 since 1997. You know, it shows it going up to 2000, down through 2002, up through 2008, way down, and then way, way up. And when you look at the chart, any rational person would think, okay, the next leg has got to be down just to make sure this chart looks pretty. But when we back up and say, yeah, eventually you'll see something come down. The question is when you'll see it come down. I've been telling folks we need some stuff to kind of catch up to the market. We need some policy to happen that's been anticipated. We need some deregulation to occur that's been anticipated. One of the first things that we've now seen that may have some legs is tax reform. I mean, that's coming hopefully sooner than later. And we're going to get into some details of that during the next break. But is that one of the main things that need to occur to underpin this market? So that we can sort of shake it off and then get back to looking at growing, fundamental growth, all the things that are necessary for the market to move.
Right. Well, I think for a meaningful move higher than where we're at, we most certainly need many of those fiscal things you just alluded to, tax reform, regulation reform, infrastructure bill, those types of things to get the market to really juice up much higher than it is. Outside of that, the economy is doing okay. earnings have been growing at a nice pace. So we're okay there. And if earnings can continue to grow, we can continue to see a little bit more to the upside, potentially just off of earnings. But like I said, that is a little bit minimal based on no fiscal policies getting enacted. What really has been going on and continues for the foreseeable future right now is just there's not a lot of negative to cause the big sell-off. And everybody feels as though, like you talked about, you look at the chart and you feel as though, well, gosh, yeah, it has to go back. At some point in time, it is going to, but there is no mathematical reason that says it has to go back sooner than later. Mm-hmm. Just like so far this year, if we finish this year without a bigger sell-off than the biggest dip we had this year, which is like a 3.3%, if we don't sell off any more than that before the year end, this will be the lowest full downside capture within the market, meaning any market, whether you finished up or down, you always have a little bit of down in the year. This will be the smallest downside capture in a year ever in history. Okay, so that tells people, oh, we have to have it. Well, no, you don't. Not just because of that. I mean, we had one of these previously, mm-hmm. and we didn't automatically have to have a big sell-off. So sell-offs are caused by something. Economic downturns is typically the most common thing. Financial crisis, those obviously are the ones that tend to cause the bigger sell-offs and the more contracted or the more attracted recessions. And from the Great Depression to the Great Recession that we had, those types of things. But there isn't anything mathematically that says you absolutely have to. We just know that the economy runs in cycles. It will not always grow. It will contract at times. And typically that's when the market contracts as well.
And the Fed needs all of its arrows back in the quiver when that time happens. You know, before the beginning of this big bull market back in March of 2009, when Rod and I were right here on this radio show saying that things are on sale, we were at a 12-year low. Folks, come on, shake it off. It's produced annual gains of 19% total return over each of the last 8.5 years. The S&P closed at a bear market low of 677 back on March 9, 2009. You know, it's funny. When you're in our world, Rod, March 9th of 2009 will go down in infamy the way that many other dates have gone down that way, which is completely insane that our minds work that way. But, I mean, if I said to Rod, if I woke him up out of his sleep, hey, hi, Rod, get up. He'd wake up with glassy eyes at 2:30 in the morning, like, hey, first of all, why aren't you in my house? But the second, don't worry about that, Rod. My question is, what was the bear market low? March 9th, 09, stupid. Now get out of here. Okay, and then I would climb down the ridge, Rod, over a little Clear Creek, back up over into Bella Vista, and get back in my bed. We're going to take a break. When we come back, let's talk about the Trump-proposed tax cuts. What does it mean for you? What does it mean for the economy when we come back? This is Your Money with David Hayes. President Donald J. Trump and the GOP leaders proposed sharp reductions to tax rates on businesses and many individuals, kicking off, of course, a major legislative push to overhaul the nation's tax code this year. Well, finally, it's here. Finally, it's come. Rod, I mean, the big news, obviously, there's a couple of things, but the big news is corporate taxes. And you and I, as we were preparing for the show, walking into the station, you mentioned that that's one area that the Republicans have said we're not budging on. You know, under the Republican plan, the corporate tax rate would fall to 20% from its current 35%. And then on individuals, the top tax rate would drop from 35% to 39, I'm sorry, from 39.6 down to 35. Let's talk about the corporate tax rate first. I mean, to me, this is a really big deal, not just because I own a corporation, but because I can tell you that taxes are by far my biggest expense. It costs me more in taxes, or as much in taxes, as it does to pay payroll. Well, guess what? If we had a little bit more of that money in our pocket, would I just go stick it in the bank or go on a cruise or buy a bigger bass boat? Well, maybe, but I would probably hire and expand. I think that's what most business people would do. That'd allow you to maybe hire two or three more people. Well, when you do that, you expand your business. When you expand your business, that creates more opportunities for even other people. But then that creates, when we have three more people on the payroll, that's more payroll taxes, more money heading into Social Security. Because, folks, corporations don't pay Social Security tax. They pay federal tax, period. They don't pay into that system. So there's some brilliancy behind the fact that you should be thinking about lowering the corporate income tax. Now, Rod, to me, and I don't get very opinionated very often on the show, but to me, my opinion is this is a freaking no-brainer.
Yeah, oh yeah, most certainly. You know, and the big argument has always been that corporations will hoard the money, they'll give bonuses to the executives and things like that. And unfortunately, some corporations will. I mean, we cannot tell them what to do with their tax-saving dollars. But the reality is, there are plenty of corporations that are going to do exactly what you said, and they're potentially going to hire some people. And it's that trickle-through effect of the new hires, the spending that they do, the new tax revenue that they do, that is the benefit. Not only that, the other thing that seems to get overlooked in this, and it was kind of shut down a little bit with the Obama administration, predominantly because of the way they talked about Be American and things like that. But the reality is, if a company, and especially this is larger, this is multinational type companies, or people that are big enough to consider becoming multinational companies, if they're looking at building a new facility because they've had a dramatic increase in demand, if the capital is cheaper, if the profit margins are higher someplace else, you know what? Those jobs in that factory get built someplace else. And that's exactly what the government and the people that have been pushing for this change have been saying. Listen, we have a corporate tax rate of 35%. The average around the rest of the world is like 22%, 20%, something along those lines. So, yeah, companies look at that and say, hey, you know what? We can do better if we go overseas and build this next facility. And guess what? They're hiring people right there in that country. So you want to give them incentive to say, hey, you know what? You're on a level playing field. You don't need to build that new facility someplace else to have these tax savings. You can get it right here. And then, yes, we will reap some rewards off of that. And like I said, you can't shoot down a good idea because there's a few bad actors out there that won't necessarily take advantage of these added profits and reinvest them and do the things we need them to do.
Well, and the big corporations, folks, they already have tax sheltering figured out. I mean, it's really the small and mid-sized companies that I think is going to benefit from this. But I think, Rod, the key is that I believe the administration got a bunch of corporations, business owners together and said, what will it take for you to repatriate, for you to start doing business in America? What tax rate? And 20% was the number. So I think that hopefully we can get some support for that. But here's the thing. Let's talk about the individual tax rate. So they're going to go from, you know, whatever it is to three tax brackets, maybe four. That's negotiable according to the administration currently. To me, Rod, the big news isn't the reduction in the number of tax brackets or the reduction in the rate, but it's what they're doing on the deduction side. Because even though they're lowering the 39.6 down to 35, they're actually going to reduce some deductions by, on average, they think 5%, which would actually be a net increase of taxes by 2, if my math is right, or close to that. So that, to me, is not necessarily tax reduction. On the flip side, the lower tax brackets, they're going to get double standard deductions, which, by the by, most people in the lower income brackets use the standard deduction. They don't itemize with interest, taxes they pay to the state, their plates, the charitable contributions, all the things that end up on your itemized deductions. They're like, Hayes, keep going on. Am I getting all my deductions? But yeah, they don't do that. So even though their rates are going to go down, plus deductions up. So my guess is we'll have another group of people that may pay little or no income taxes. So I think that the media, I think that the newspapers are going to be caught up on the brackets, but I think you should look more at the deduction side, Hot Rod, to see really where the story is to be told.
Yeah, exactly. The people that they're claiming that they want to help and that both sides say that they want to help and that this plan is supposedly for, that middle class, just like you said, I think I saw statistics that only roughly 20% of tax filers actually itemize. So that tells me that, you know what, there's a whole bunch of people in that middle class that aren't itemizing. So some of those deductions that may get taken away don't affect them anyway. So doubling that standard deduction, they're looking at doubling the child tax credit. You know, those are real things that hit everybody regardless of your income. It's not an income thing. That's not something that just benefits exclusively the wealthy, which my understanding is actually the wealthy, that standard deduction gets phased out for them. So, right. So they're not necessarily going to have that, although they're probably the ones in that 20% that are still itemizing. So they have those things going for them. But yeah, the state tax, everyone's like, oh gosh, New York, California, those big states aren't going to go for eliminating the state tax deduction. Well, if people would actually stop and think about it, a large majority of your voters probably don't get that deduction because they don't itemize. So losing it didn't hurt you any.
Right. Okay, so lower income folks are going to have double deductions, lower brackets, more money in their pocket. Higher income earners are going to have maybe less deductions, lower bracket, probably revenue neutral. Maybe they pay a little more in tax. Who really knows? Here's the key, folks, and this is why I think it's so darn important. Remember, we are in a consumer-driven economy. What people spend money or how much they spend matters. Nearly 70% of our gross domestic product is based on consumer spending. So listen, when these lower income people get extra money in their pocket, what do you think they're going to do with it? Are they going to go to Walmart and spend it? Are they going to stick it into their savings account? Or are they going to pay down their debts? Well, as much as you would think that they should do the latter, they won't. They're going to do the former. They will spend that money, and that should be a driver of economic activity. Older folks that may get these deductions, they're not going to spend it. They're going to stick the money in the bank. They're not going to spend it. The higher income earners, it really shouldn't affect their spending that much. I mean, they're still going to buy, you know, what they're going to buy, the cars they're going to drive. But I really think that this, that lowering taxes, and you have to go through this, folks. You've got to go through this stuff over time. Where you have lower taxes, then you'll have higher taxes. And that's why I really think it's so important for us to get our hands around the fact that at some point in our lives, I don't know, hopefully it's not, I mean, I'm 48, right? So I'm pretty confident it'll be in my lifetime. Taxes will go up. And taxes will go up because they have to. They have to pay for the things we've already promised, our unfunded liabilities. And remember, if these tax cuts go through, it will be under what's known as the Budget Reconciliation Act. The passage of controversial laws always go through this way. It requires a... because we're not going to get a three-fifths vote in the House and Senate. It's just not going to happen. But remember, budget reconciliation only requires a simple majority, and that's there currently. But here's the catch. Just with the, as with the Bush tax cuts back in 2003, any tax reductions pushed through under budget reconciliation would sunset in 10 years. So you'd have 10 years of these lower tax rates to not only enjoy, hopefully, for some of you, and maybe that would cause some economic activity and expansion, and that would then lead into, you know, good investment returns in the market, which I truly believe could happen. But it also gives you opportunities. It gives you opportunities to reposition your assets over the next 10 years from taxable forever to tax-free forever using vehicles that we talk about all the time here on the show. So if you're not locked and loaded, cocked and ready, and if you need any help, Rod's son just got a job at Dick's Sporting Goods over in the in the gun department. He can help you out. He can explain what I mean by locked and loaded or cocked and ready. Just go there. He'll demonstrate it. No problem. I think he starts tonight. That's what you have to be so that you're not setting yourself up for 15 years, 20 years down the road of saying, hey, you, with all that money that's never been taxed, we need some of it. Oh, you just died, and you're going to pass all this money to your heirs where you've never paid the taxes? We're not going to let them defer it anymore. We need the money now. Those are the things that I think will do wonders for you and your family if you're just educated enough and aware enough to be ready when these things pass. So I think 2018 is the year. I'm just going to continue to beat this drum until you're sick of hearing me talk about it. Hopefully I can beat it in a different way or a different tune so it's not so boring. But Rod, I'm telling you, I think there's a massive opportunity coming down the road here for people if they're just ready to make the moves.
Oh, yeah, most certainly. I mean, everybody on both sides of the aisle knows something needs to be done. The reality is they have gotten away from compromise and understanding that the best bills that have historically been written in Congress, both sides were not extremely happy. Both sides gave up some things they didn't want to give up, and that's exactly what has to get done here. We've been stuck for about the last 10 or 12 years in a mode in which everybody wants to get their thing 100%, and if they don't, their answer is no, which is why we haven't gotten a lot of things done without executive orders or reconciliation to pass it, so you've got a sunset provision in which it goes away. But we need legit, real tax reform. which even with this, it may end up only being tax cuts versus true tax reform, because it's a very complicated tax system that we have, and it could be dramatically simplified.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to kind of change topics here. How many times have someone stopped me, whether it's at a tailgate or just, you know, in passing over dinner, whatever, and said, you know, what is a person like me supposed to have saved by now? I mean, they have no idea. So there was some great research that came out from some pretty big firms that talked about, you know, where should you be at age 30, 40, 50, 60? We're going to give you some rough milestones to try and reach. It's not to discourage you, but it's simply to encourage you to keep these things in mind. We'll come back and talk about that. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Hey, if you miss any of the show at all, of course, on Thursday night, head over to WGCL on Saturday mornings at 9 a.m. You can catch the show again. And then they do such a great job of putting that show up on WGCLradio.com. Go to the Your Money tab. Bam, you can play it that way. Or you can head over to iTunes, Google Play Music. iTunes is what I have. I have an iPhone. And you can subscribe. Go to your iTunes store and search Your Money with David Hayes, and a terrible picture with a blue background will pop up. Wayne Thacker took the picture, so let's blame him. And my hair was messy. I didn't have a tie on, but you know what? Whatever. It's kind of the way it looks. You look on the radio. No one can see you anyway. Press the subscribe button. When you do that, each and every week when we post a new show, you'll get an alert. A new show has been posted. And listen, I can tell you, I love listening to the radio. I love listening to different varieties of music. It's funny because I loved country music, and then kind of country got kind of rocky. Kind of rock and rollish, and that was cool for a while, but then I got away from it. Now it seems to be kind of coming back to where it was before, so I've sort of made my cycle through that. But I've been finding stations that play, you know, music like Jimmy Buffett and you know, John Mellencamp and things like that, so that's kind of cool to listen to. WTTS over here has a great station as well. But sometimes, and I don't listen to any news in the car, I don't want to be depressed, but sometimes a brother just needs a break, and podcasts are the way to go. So you can pop it on, and if you have Bluetooth, which almost every car seems to have Bluetooth now, unless you have like a 1970 Chevy pickup, which I have one of those, it doesn't even have power brakes or power steering, let alone Bluetooth. It doesn't even have AM, FM radio. That thing's broke too. But nonetheless, you can pipe it through your speakers and listen to the show and just hang out with a friend here for a cool 43 minutes or so, and hopefully you enjoy your time with me, and you learn something, and maybe you can pass something along. But I will say this. Going back to the segment that we had at hand, how much should you have saved by different ages? 30, 40, 50, 60, different ages. I mean, we all know the earlier you start saving for retirement, the better. But the big question is, again, how am I doing? There was a pretty cool article that came out that just showed about rough milestones that people should try to reach. Now, keep in mind, you might need to save more if you have bigger lifestyle dreams or income needs. But, you know, at age 30, if you can have the equivalent of 1 year's salary saved, that would be fantastic. Some 30-year-olds have the equivalent of a year's salary in debt for sure, but what about savings? That would be great if you could have about 1 year's salary at age 30 in savings. Then over at age 40, you're going to have about three times your annual earnings to be on track. The average American currently saves about 3.5% of his or her income. Can you save 3.5% of what you earn at age 25 or 30 and build a six-figure retirement by your 40th birthday? Probably not. That's why if you're 25, starting a new job, suck it up, put 10% in, and just turn your head and cough. That's the best way to go. When you're 50, Hot Rod, you do not resemble that at all. Your savings should be about six times your salary. Slow and steady savings investing should get you there if you started early, but building up to that, you know, mark in retirement can be pretty challenging because we've had to raise kids, we've had to pay for college, we had to buy cars, a lot of stuff, Hot Rod, that can derail a person in their late 40s and early 50s, right?
Oh, yeah, most certainly. Those tuition bills get a little bit salty at times.
And that's why I think for folks, you know, if you were aware enough, if you had someone encouraging you enough, back when you were in your 20s and 30s to do this, to save, you're probably okay and probably close to being on track. But if no one was there to do that, you didn't have a job with a plan, And now here you find yourself in your 40s or 50s. There is some hope. There's a light at the end of the tunnel, and it is not a train, trust me. What happens is when your kids leave the home, Hot Rod, in just a few years, your kids will be out of the house, and I know that'll be depressing when they're all gone. It's just you, Kelly, and the dog. But the dogs. I'm sure you'll have, more
plural.
Than one. Plural, yeah. But at the same time, you hope that you're in your peak earning years at that point. So you're 54, 55, 56 years old, making the most money you've ever made in your life. Maybe your spouse works as well. Your debts are starting to roll down. The kids are now off the payroll. And guess what? At that point, you can save a lot of money. Rod, we see people saving one full paycheck. We see people doing that because they know that's what it's going to take to catch up. But guess what? If they haven't gotten used to that extra cash flow once those kids are gone or the debts are paid off, then they can save it without a whole lot of reluctancy and get on track pretty quickly.
Yeah. Typically that's the easiest and best way to do it, because it's always hard to take something back from yourself. So if some of those debts roll off and you immediately start using that added cash flow in your everyday life, decide, oh, wait a minute, I'm a little behind on my savings, I need to save more, then it becomes hard to pull those dollars back into savings, versus when you pay that debt off and you say, oh, okay, I just freed up $500 a month, go ahead and start saving that, or maybe even add a little to cash flow and add some of it to savings. But it's a heck of a lot easier to start saving it before you get used to spending it and have to curtail your spending habits to start saving.
And then finally, at age 60, your savings should equal 8 to 9 times your annual earnings. Now, that's just the way it is, folks. So if you're not there, remember, there's only a few moving parts. You save more, earn more, or work longer. So if you're not quite there, folks, at that 8 to 9 times your salary at age 60, don't worry. Shoot me an email. I'll help encourage you, inspire you to get right back on track. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, J.P. Morgan releases some pretty good stuff, market insights, principles for long-term investing, and also retirement insights, principles for a successful retirement. We're not going to have much time. We're going to hit some highlights. When we come back, this is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Thanks for being with us. Hope you've enjoyed the show so far. Rod Holloway, our equity portfolio manager at CFCI, is with me. Of course, he is the voice of Glass in the Morning at 7:20 on Mondays and 7:20 on Fridays as well. And Rod, you have a famous line when I listen to you on Monday mornings, where he'll say to you, Rod, we'll talk to you on Friday morning. And then you say, Glass, thanks a lot. Have a great day, and we'll talk to you on Friday morning. And then you have Big Show Friday, which is also fun.
Oh, yeah, Big Show
it's
Friday.
It's a little looser on Fridays.
It is, and I was going to say that the 7:20 is a little more of a guesstimate on Fridays because, of course, Chuck comes in and has plenty of things going on and to keep us abreast of as far as activities at IU and all of the different athletic teams that they have.
No, nonetheless, it's a lot of fun. I love very informative. I know people appreciate you doing that each day. I mean, listen, folks, it's a commitment. On Monday morning, I mean, not that Rod isn't up. He's probably already worked out, had breakfast. But you know what? I mean, like you said, we still have stuff going on in our own personal lives. But to stop, take the time, and to articulate a well-thought-through response to Glass's sometimes not-so-thought-through questions can be a little bit derailing. No offense, Michael. You know I love you. All right. Hi, Rod. We just have a couple minutes, but J.P. Morgan Chase puts out a market insights both on principles for successful long-term investing and also principles for successful retirement. Real quick, and this is going to seem very basic, but one of the major successes of long-term investing is just to do it, is not to worry so much about what's happening today with tax cuts, what's happening tomorrow with North Korea, but simply to do it, Rod, because you can't control the markets. You can't control even how long you're going to be on this earth, but what you can control is putting money away and doing it consistently over a long period of time.
Yeah, well, and people tend to get too caught up. There's obviously an abundance of information out there, be it the news channels, be it internet or whatever, and the people that are covering investing in stocks 24/7. Here's the deal. No one understands. Most all of those guys are traders.
Mm-hmm.
They're in it to make money quick and fast and move on. Most of our listeners, most of our clients, they're long-term investors. They don't need to trade. They need to own good quality investments, well-rounded asset allocation and well diversified and just keep plugging away at the thing. And long term, that system does work.
Here's the thing. Rod and I have been doing this a long time. When someone comes into our office and they plop down a retirement statement that has $2 million in it, most of the time, they're not going to be able to sit here and talk about price-to-earnings ratios, Sharpe ratios, Bollinger Bands, 200-day moving averages. They're not going to be able to talk about any of that. They'll look at us like we're talking gibberish. All they'll say is, well, you know what? I started saving when I was young and never really got over my skis with buying things and lived in the same house pretty much for the last 30 years, had a couple kids. Rod, that is the blue-collar millionaire right there, and they are everywhere. And I'm telling you, the number one principle they had, and this is the number one principle, is that they saved early, saved often. They didn't do without. They did everything they wanted to do during their life, but they did that religiously and automatically and never wavered from that. And can you tell me any other thing that's the number one identifier of someone that has amassed that kind of money with sometimes very modest incomes?
Yeah, we've seen it many a times, those modest incomes, and it is very surprising, but in most cases, exactly what you said. They knew that's what they should do, so they did it, and they just stuck with it. They didn't try and jump in and out of the market. They didn't try and sector rotate or anything. They just built a nice quality portfolio, developed a game plan, stuck with it. Next thing you know, they're at retirement age, and they got a few million bucks. And they may only made $30,000-$40,000 a year, or $60,000 or $70,000 as a couple. Filing jointly. I mean, it is amazing when you see it, but it isn't as tricky as what a lot of people think it is.
And they invested in the market. They did not stick their money in the stable value fund out of fear. They were educated enough to know that this is where I should be long term, even though I may not understand it completely. All right, we're going to take a break, come back. We're going to wrap up the big show. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Just a couple minutes left in the show. So listen, if you work at Cook Pharmica, some big news. Don't be scared. It's going to be great for you guys. But listen, you're going to have to make some choices. Sounds like sometime in the next month or two on what to do with your 401ks over at Fidelity. You should have the option of keeping it there. You can move it into the new plan, or you can roll it over into an individual retirement account. Now, I will tell you that if you're just a younger person with a smaller balance, the best and easiest thing to roll it is into the new plan. Don't know much about the new plan, but just to keep things simple. If you're a little more mature worker, I think you need to think about putting it into an IRA. I mean, starting to take a little more control of those monies. You can invest in different things, go different places with that money. So that's something that you should consider if you need any help at all. We're actually doing some of the financial wellness for Cook upcoming this fall. Please email us over at cfci.us and we'll take care of you. Also, those over at Premier Health got a little scared this week. We were helping someone take some money from the old plan into an IRA versus moving into the new IU Health plan. And they said, hey, if you don't do anything at all, we're going to kick checks out, withhold 20%, call it a premature distribution, and then you're on your own. So it's kind of freaky. So we were sort of playing some defense this week. But if you're over at Premier Health and need some help, please reach out to us. We'll be more than happy to help you out. CFCI.us. You can contact us there anytime and use our website as a great resource. Hey, everyone, have a great weekend. I'll be at beautiful West Boggs Park in Ligoti, Indiana for the Hayes Boy Camp Out this weekend. Bye-bye.
Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.